Well, good morning, everybody. My name is James Albino. I'm the Senior Program Manager for the Office of Minority... I'm a little nervous. Office of National AIDS Policy here in the White House. I'm very happy to see everybody. Some very familiar faces, some new friends. I'm excited about this conversation. I just want to take some housekeeping notes. First, the bathrooms. The men's room is to the left, leaving the door, and just down the hall to the right. Ladies' room is at the end of this hallway to the right. We are live streaming this event, so folks at home, you can tweet everybody at home and let them know, your kids and your boss, and let them know that you are, in fact, here in the White House. From a security perspective, two issues. I know there were some challenges getting through security, but that's the nature of where we are. We're in a secure facility, and that can be a little difficult, and it's a black box that I don't understand, and I don't pretend to understand, so... I'm not going to try to explain it, but it does happen, and I'm sorry if you had some challenges. You are in a secure building, so please, when you leave here, you should go to the exit and leave expeditiously. I'm very excited about today's event. This is the first time we're engaging this community. We've engaged a number of communities, and Jeff will detail that later on in a few minutes, but I'm so happy to be here. We have an exciting panel, and I want to turn it over immediately to Jeff. Thanks.
Good morning. It's my pleasure to welcome you to the White House. I'm Jeffrey Crawley, the Director of the Office of National AIDS Policy. And as some of you may know, the president tasked my office with developing a national HIV/AIDS strategy. And today's meeting is sort of part of our conversation leading up to that. Over the last, I don't know how many months, we've spent a lot of time listening to Americans, trying to say that before we developed this strategy, we really wanted to get as many ideas from as many people as possible. We've traveled the country. We held 14 community discussions all across the country. We had an online process where we heard from people. We also did a series of meetings at the White House. So previously, we held meetings on HIV in youth. We took a look at issues on HIV in women. We took a special look at issues around housing. And this is the next in a series of those meetings leading up to the development of the strategy. Now, one of the things that I want you all to know is that we see you all as important partners in this effort. And as we've traveled the country and gone along the way, many corporate leaders, foundations, and others have said, how can we help? And so we really see this meeting as really the beginning of a dialogue about how we can work together to sharpen our country's response to HIV and really focus on the domestic epidemic. Now, we're open to your ideas, and so we're not like we're going to say this is where we're going, but we had a couple ideas of sort of like areas where we think it would be good to work with you. One is really new partnerships on improving access to care and treatment for people living with HIV, and we think that there's some natural ways that we could work together. Another is looking at media partnerships, and really we recognize we need to engage the American people again to focus on the domestic epidemic, and I think there are hopefully lots of opportunities we can all work together. And then the third area is really just looking at research. And when we think about what we need to do with HIV prevention, we think we have some really good tools about preventing HIV on an individual basis. But one of the things that we think is really important is developing good, effective community-level interventions. And we need help doing that. So I think that's another area where I think we'd like to have a conversation with you on how we can partner together. I want to welcome all of you here today, but I know many of you as individual organizations work in coalitions with others. I just want to specifically acknowledge three key partners of ours. Funders Concerned About AIDS, the Global Business Coalition, and the National AIDS Fund have all been really key partners to us, and we appreciate all their great work. But again, I'm really looking forward to today's dialogue, and I just want to welcome you for being here. Now I'd like to introduce my colleague, who is Sonal Shah. She's the Deputy Assistant to the President and Director of the Office of Social Innovation and Civic Participation. Sonal.
Well, thank you. It's so great to be here and to work with such great colleagues like Jeff. And we work very closely with them in our office. And I work also for Melody Barnes, who I know you'll be talking to in a little while. And our job in the office is to work with colleagues like Jeff and others on a three-part agenda. One, broadening civic participation throughout the country, working on investing in new innovative solutions that can show results, and really thinking about innovation in a different way and investing in a different way that is really looking at results. And the last is partnerships and doing partnerships in a different way and looking at shared responsibility, not just transaction partnerships, but really thinking about how government can be a partner with civil society, with nonprofits, with foundations and philanthropy, as well as the business community, and thinking about how those partnerships can operate differently. And the goal of the office is to look at bottom-up solutions, what's working in communities, and how can the government look differently at finding those solutions and also scaling those solutions that are working to increase participation. It's not just about what government can do and what nonprofits can do and others, but also what can the communities do at local levels and how can they be a part and a partner with the government. Develop new models of partnerships we just talked about. And let me just talk a little bit about the types of partnerships we are working on and which we will be working with our colleagues and we work across the government on. One is just the STEM partnership, science, technology, engineering, and math. And this is a model where we're working with philanthropy, we're working with the tech community, we're working with media companies to really how to increase STEM education across the country. One is awareness. A second part is actually new teachers. A third part is increasing more children to understand and appreciate STEM education. But all of this requires different series of partnerships from government, where government is a partner in this, to nonprofits, to the science community, as well as the media companies and foundations and philanthropy, as well as philanthropists. And this partnership has created a new nonprofit that sits alongside, that sits outside of government, but partners with the Offices in Science and Technology Policy, as well as our colleagues in the Domestic Policy Council that work on education. And it's created a new model to think about how what we can do is really get our policies right, but what this nonprofit can do and what the community can do is really get that information out in a way that sometimes government is just not going to be able to do. And these are exactly the types of partnerships we hope to work on with you and others in our community, but especially with Jeff and James, to think about how we can work with the community in improving and thinking about the models of partnerships that are being created across government and testing these new models and especially working, taking some of the lessons learned that we've learned from the other partnerships to help you develop partnerships with the government and how to best increase solutions. And hope to learn much more as I sit through today's meeting. And I'll turn it back to James.
Thank you, Sonal and Jeff. I'm going to turn it over to Melody Barnes, who's the assistant to the president and director of the Domestic Policy Council. She's our boss, and a great boss to have, because this really is a conversation.
James is not stupid.
This really is a conversation, and this is how we structured the conversation, and Melody's going to be leading the conversation. And it'll be a panel conversation with Melody, and we'll be directing questions to her and to the panel. We'll then open up briefly at the end for some brief questions and answers at the end that you can address the panel and the rest of us. Joining Melody is Candy Ferry with the National AIDS Fund. She's the president. Nancy Mahan, MAC Cosmetics, senior vice president. Anthony Hooper, Bristol-Myers Squibb, president of Americas. Karen Davis, Hasbro Inc., vice president, community relations. David McMurray, Chevron. Louis Spragans, Positive Charge, Chicago. Joe Kimbrell, Louisiana Public Health Institute. And Tom Luce, National Math and Science Initiative. Now, you'll ask why Tom in this panel on HIV/AIDS. He is the beneficiary of other partnerships in the STEM program. And as Sonal pointed out, we've had great success in the STEM, in Educate to Innovate program, around STEM, and he can testify to the success of that program. So I leave it to you, Melody.
Great. Thank you so much. Thank you, James. It is a pleasure to be here with all of you today and to engage in this conversation. I think, as Jeff said at the top of his comments, the president charged the Office of National AIDS Policy with the task of developing a national AIDS strategy. And I think that indicates to you, I hope it does, the importance of this issue to this president and just how important he believes addressing this issue, turning the corner on this issue in terms of care and treatment and prevention is to the country and to his administration. And as a result, we hope today will be the first in several conversations with you about this particular topic. And in fact, we believe some of the most exciting work that we're doing in the Domestic Policy Council and in the White House is happening in the areas rooted in the kinds of partnerships that we've been forming. Sonal talked about Educate to Innovate, as we've been doing work, and many of you may in recent days have heard about the rollout of the Childhood Obesity Task Force report and the First Lady's Let's Move initiative, that so much of that work is also rooted in partnerships. And we're doing this really all across the administration. So we believe that this is a really timely conversation and an important way to start to thread these issues and this tool into the work that we hope will come out of the National Aid Strategy. We obviously believe that it's critical to the success of the aid strategy, and again, to turning the corner I was talking about, to engage with all of you, to engage with activists and advocates on the ground, with state and local governments, with the private sector, with philanthropists, with people living with AIDS and HIV, so that we can think about partnerships in a very, very smart way. And in fact, the National AIDS Strategy will require that kind of partnership. You know, as with so many things, when the president talks about it, he says, you know, the government can't do this alone, nor should we. It will require the expertise and the resources of everyone coming together, all of us leveraging what each of the others of us have, if we're going to be successful in this. So again, today we see is the first in a series of conversations about this, and we want to talk about the experiences that those on the panel with me have had, those of you in the audience have had, to think about the example of Educate to Innovate and to learn and to benefit from that as we think about ways to put partnerships together in this particular context. And in particular, how we can fill that gap between the resources and the wherewithal of the federal government, and please believe that we're putting our shoulder to the wheel on this, but that gap between the federal government and the needs of the community on this issue and how we can fill that. I think Jeff also mentioned several different areas where we're thinking about partnerships, certainly in terms of access, care, and treatment. I think Jeff also mentioned in the context of media and media partnerships, so that we can educate and we can get the word out to all the communities that need it and all the communities that are effective. And also in terms of joint research ventures that capitalize on the smart and ingenious efforts that are taking place in communities around the country. So those are the three buckets or baskets that we're thinking about. And at the very end, just so those of you in the audience don't think that you're getting off the hook and we'll be doing all the work, we're going to ask you, what do you think we should be doing next? Again, we want to build on your expertise. So thinking about this conversation, your own set of experiences, what should we be doing very specifically in the coming weeks and months as we continue this dialogue with you and with others around the country? So with that, I want to go ahead and get started. I know James introduced the members of the panel, and I'm not going to pretend like, you know, we've all been hanging out for weeks and months, so I recognize everyone by face. And I say that because their names, no names printed on this side of these table tent cards. So if I call on someone, I'm looking right and they're left. You'll understand why that happened. So, Candy. Great. I want to start with you because in real time, you've actually introduced and announced a very exciting partnership, Positive Charge Access to Care Initiative. And I wanted to ask you to share with us a little bit more about that partnership, how it came into being, and who your partners are.
Well, thank you, Melody, and thank you, everyone in the Office of National AIDS Policy for hosting this meeting. I think those of us in the private sector and the grantees that are here today, I think, are tremendously grateful, first of all, to be back in the White House again, which is very nice, but also to be entertaining this conversation. The initiative that we announced recently actually is Positive Charge. It's an initiative that we have been thinking about and working on for some time with regard to how could we expand our work, which has primarily been in the area of prevention, to really look at the issues around access to care. And at the National AIDS Fund, our 21-year history has really been built around empowering communities, not sitting in Washington and trying to figure out what should happen in different communities across the country. So we worked with Bristol-Myers Squibb to envision an access to care initiative that would provide some broad parameters and levels of accountability and measures, but at the same time would put out to communities the opportunity to respond to an RFP And we now have five grantees that we announced this morning, Chicago, New York City, San Francisco, Oakland, the state of North Carolina, and the state of Louisiana. And we are very excited that these will be major investments over multiple years, which we believe when we're talking about access to care work, that's the kind of investment it's going to take to be able to see some significant change. And the primary target population is people who already know they are HIV positive but are not in care. We know that CDC is doing a lot of work around testing and others are working on testing. We think that's critical, but we really believe that it's important that we get to those 600,000 people who are living with HIV in the country who are not in care. And that's the work that we'll do. And I'm pleased to say, and the White House has been incredibly gracious, that all of those grantees are represented here in the audience. And at the end of the day, this isn't about the National AIDS Fund. It isn't about any of us on this panel. It's not about Bristol-Myers Squibb. This is about how do we invest in community interventions and community work that we know is really doing, going to make the change, going to turn the needle as it relates to the strategy.
Great, that's wonderful. And I want to come back to you in a second, but just to draw in another example of partnership and then talk about these together, I want to ask Nancy. I told you, I'm not going to fake it. In terms of MAC Cosmetics, and MAC is a corporate funder, obviously, but you have a really unique model of corporate philanthropy, and the work that you've done through the MAC AIDS Fund, I think, is really highly regarded and quite well known. You work in the Global Business Coalition, also funders concerned about AIDS, so you're working in coalition with other funders and others who are thinking about this issue specifically. And I think it was interesting when Jeff and James and I were talking about this, and they said MAC, I was like, oh yeah, Viva Glam. I mean, I think, you know, people are really well acquainted with the work you're doing because you are using, use one of your products to help drive a particular issue. And I wanted you to talk about that and how you've used your brand to try and connect with this issue and how it's related to other relationships that you've used to leverage to try and support HIV and AIDS.
Sure. Well, great. Thank you. You know, we're happy to be a leader in corporate giving to AIDS. We would love more company. So I also thought that I would just speak really briefly about sort of making the business case for why corporations should be involved. You know, the bottom line is that MAC, like a lot of great giving companies, was a family business. Two guys, Frank and Frank in Toronto, invented the company in 1984, and the employees voted what to give the money to, and they voted resoundingly to give money to AIDS. And I think the reason that the Viva Glam line has really worked, which I've happily inherited, is because that it's fun, it's joyous, it's sexy. I mean, people listen to Lady Gaga in a way. I mean, I listen to the Surgeon General, but I think, you know, the vast majority of people don't. And we, I think, particularly now in terms of relevance, particularly for women, given the high numbers, that Lady Gaga honestly has been phenomenal. And we've sold, literally in 4 months, we've sold $3 million worth of just that one lipstick, which has raised an enormous amount of money. But in terms of, you know, giving in the field, we've been happy to be in the company of a lot of great pharma companies. I think this is a really historic moment for more non-pharma companies to get involved and for pharma to get involved in an even a bigger way. And I think that for a couple of reasons. I mean, you know, corporate foundations have two jobs. We do good in the world and we add value to the brand. And I think it's important to kind of keep track of both of those because the bottom line is we have shareholders. In terms of good in the world, you know, we could not have, this is a critical leadership moment. You know, under your leadership and under the president's leadership and Jeff's leadership, we have had more policy changes over the last 6 months than we've ever had in terms of enabling us to do good work in the trenches, the lifting of the ban on immigration of people living with HIV, the lifting of the ban on federal syringe access. So we have great leadership. We also have, in the Office of Social Innovation, partnership. We also have great local leadership. You know, the bottom line is that we're lucky enough not to have a generalized epidemic, that we are concentrated in these particular cities. And you have Shannon Hader here in D.C., which we're happy to be partnering with. In Oakland, we have great leadership. So I think both of those are in place. The other is that we have, I think, multiple points of entry. You don't have to fund just HIV. We've looked at the intersection of violence, of poverty, of microenterprise. So there's various issues, I think, that people could intersect on. And then lastly, the last bucket around value to the brand. I mean, the bottom line is that HIV is a behaviorally based disease. And I think for a long time, it's been seen as corporately, honestly, an issue that most people don't want to get involved in. I think MAC is a terrific example of how it is good for your brand to invest in HIV. You know, we've had spokesmodels like Lady Gaga and Mary J. Blige. the vast majority of MAC customers look a lot more like me than they do like Mary J. Blige. And I think it's important to remember that, that soccer moms or who your consumers are really do care about HIV in a way that might not you might not necessarily think. And we have seen in our business that as the Viva Glam campaigns have been successful, we can literally track that it increases the success of the overall business. And so I think it's in terms of the corporate foundations, there is an enormous potential, enormous untapped resource, and particularly, honestly, as the epidemic has moved among, I think in particular, Black women, I think it would be great to sort of start a sort of consumer movement, as it were, that we want more people to invest at home. I think it's terrific, and we've given a lot of money internationally to HIV and AIDS, but the bottom line is this administration has an inherited, really, an AIDS funding deficit that you're doing a terrific job in battling back, but we've got a lot of good work to do, and we could use a lot more company.
Great. Well, and I'm curious about that, because I think I've seen a trend in recent years, you know, as more and more corporations focus on, you know, corporate social responsibility. And in the past, you might have, you know, the tire maker that was giving or focused on a cause that was completely separate from what they were doing, versus this integration and thinking about how good work can also lead to good for the corporate community and the brand itself. And I was wondering, as you engage with your with others and other corporations, how they respond to the work that you're doing and this call to action and thinking about this issue in particular.
Well, I think there is a greater listening around funding of HIV domestically and how that can be good for the brand. Because, you know, there's a term called cause alignment, which basically means that what you're referring to, what you fund has to sort of bolster the brand as well as do good in the world. And I do think that the terrific work that's been done by the Black Media AIDS Partnership and other, you know, media partnerships, which Jeff mentioned earlier, have made an enormous difference in terms of destigmatizing the disease. And I think we have a long way to go. But particularly under this administration, I think there's an enormous opportunity to bring in people who aren't stakeholders in the healthcare business. Because AIDS is an issue that is so far beyond healthcare. And I think, unfortunately, it's been sort of cabined into that box. And I think we have the opportunity to really open it up.
Nancy Ann, to Candy, and thinking about the work that you're both doing, and you were alluding to some of it and some of the policy changes that have taken place recently, how can the White House, and also thinking about the National AIDS Strategy, specifically help foster these kinds of partnerships and encourage and support the kind of work that you're doing?
I think there are a couple of things. I mean, I think hosting this kind of meeting is hugely important, and I think we would probably all agree that the White House has the opportunity, the bully pulpit, to really put this on the radar screen of businesses. And the fact that you've begun this conversation, and I think the fact that you've done it in a way that's included community. We certainly know in the HIV and AIDS arena that is a dialogue, an attention that we always sort of struggle with how do we empower community and people living with HIV and honor the value that community brings, but also how do we make, as Nancy was saying, the business case for why companies and foundations should be involved. So I think it starts here. But I think it goes much beyond this. And I think you have an opportunity, because you are the White House, because you are the Office of National AIDS Policy, to really put out a call to action, to really use examples like the ones that are going to be talked about today as examples of how companies can and must, how foundations can and must invest in this issue, because it's not just about HIV. It's about social justice. It's about poverty. It's about race and gender and youth and women and all of these things that every company has those populations, or however you want to carve up the demographics, represented among their employee base, in the communities in which they happen to be based, or in the folks that they look to as their current or potential consumer markets. So you have a huge opportunity, I think, to take this and move it forward. And I think also working with funders concerned about AIDS, the Global Business Coalition, the National AIDS Fund, and challenging us to work with each other. I think that, you know, in the AIDS arena, we have not always done that well, if we want to be honest. And I think this is the opportunity today for us to really sort of join hands and to really think about how we bring the pharma, the non-pharma, as well as the AIDS coalitions together.
I think also, just to add
to Candy's great comments is the integration of HIV funding, which domestically, I've been very impressed with the president's leadership of integration of PEPFAR into the State Department, which made enormous sense, and I've been lucky enough to be working with Ambassador Goosby on that. I think a similar model in the U.S., where you look at, for instance, for women, integrating sexual health, because, for instance, the vast majority of poor women seek health care around sexual and reproductive health. So one is integration and coordination of the federal funding streams and transparency, which I think you've made numerous steps for. A second is, and this is, we've been happy to partner with the CDC Foundation here in DC on a female condom initiative that we're doing. You have enormous in-kind ability and just the imprimatur of the White House and the federal government to donate in-kind work by the CDC to evaluate, again, to sort of catch up on what I would get to the starting line on the prevention funding deficit, is to invest the brain power of the CDC. You have a history of great funding of prevention programs called DEBBIES, but there's enormous need for other prevention programs. And the question is, given the dollars that you have at the CDC and NIH, how can you leverage also your brain power and your imprimatur? And then lastly, I think concrete deals. Businesses respond to deals. And so you can have broader discussions about partnership, but for somebody like me, and I also want to recognize my colleague Diana Echevarria in the audience, who oversees our domestic portfolio, we really need to go to our bosses and say, can we invest in this? Partnership is great, but in terms of the investment piece, I think that what we could do is look at different buckets coming out of the national AIDS policy, whether it be housing or women's health, and then coalesce funders and make priorities on specific deals and in terms of leveraging either private dollars and the public dollars. But I think that level of integration and thinking through has not happened, because the bottom line is there's more need than money. And from a business perspective, you want the biggest return on investment. And you all, I think, have the brain power and the imprimatur and the leadership to leverage that.
Well, I want to talk to the other half of Candy's partnership and Tony from Bristol-Myers Squibb. And specifically, what the thinking was about engaging in this area. What drew you into this area? What was the thinking internally? Thank you.
Talk to me first. So, thank you, Melody. Let me get a bit closer if I can. First of all, thank you very much for inviting us. We as a company, Bristol-Myers, are honored to be part of this White House panel talking about the National HIV/AIDS Strategy. Our mission is to enhance and extend human life, and we tend to mobilize our people around that quite well, in fact. And we as a company have been committed to the fight against HIV/AIDS for over 20 years now. During that 20-year period, we've seen some enormous advances in medical science and technology. And yet, in spite of these enormous advances, HIV continues to remain a major issue in our societies. It is an issue that impacts not just individuals, but entire communities as well. Medicine alone is just the tip of the iceberg in solving this issue. We need to really understand what are the barriers to access. And therefore, our ability to reach out into organizations such as Candy's, the NAF, and other organizations, we have the ability to work with the communities on the ground. And it's clear to us, based on all the work we've done to date, that interaction with the communities is really where it happens. That's where we make a difference, and that's where we can actually get locked down into the barriers that stop patients getting access. Things such as personal barriers, things such as society stigma barriers, things such as structural barriers that just disallow patients getting access. And hence, organizations like this that sort of form this private-public partnership really give us an access to be much more successful. I think Positive Charge brings all the expertise and knowledge that Bristol-Myers had over many years of research and development, working in communities, together with organizations like Candy's, to link into the communities to make that success.
And I know that you have been working with the Global Business Coalition and funders concerned about AIDS. If you were talking to your colleagues, your peers in the business community, what would you say to them about your work through various intermediaries in terms of what does that look like, how well that's worked for you, how they can similarly engage?
So the first thing we say to our colleagues is, come on in and join us. Help us fund the program, because this is not about us. This is not about any one of us. This is about getting the HIV problem attacked and managed. But any company thinking of getting into this type of process has to carefully sit and work out what the objectives are, what do they want to achieve, and then look at the expertise of each of these organizations and align both the objective and the expertise to make sure you choose the organization that will actually help you execute your objective as best as possible. The Global Business Coalition, we've worked with them extensively, and they bring together an ability to maximize their partners' business expertise and skills. The other organizations help us, you know, link and communicate amongst the organizations, spread knowledge. Candy's organization has a history of being able to reach into impacted societies and really help us allocate funding and grants and make sure that the work gets done at the right place at the right time. So that's what we say to them.
And David, I want to draw you into the conversation now. Thank you. This is what we call partnership.
Turn them all around for you.
No, I don't want to disadvantage them. And I know you're also part of the Global Business Coalition, and so getting your experience and speaking specifically to the kind of work that you're doing in Oakland, California.
Yeah. First of all, I want to provide a little context. I know a lot of you probably said, an oil company, what is he doing up here? As far back as the 90s, we were working in Angola because there was a problem with unsafe blood. We worked in Angola's Cabinda province to provide training, doctors, equipment to screen for HIV and hepatitis, which was clearly about a fourth of the infection rate. And then 12 months later, that was cut to zero. And as early back as 1986 in San Francisco, we worked with 13 Bay Area companies to produce a video called An Epidemic of Fear, AIDS in the Workplace. We've also developed significant training that we shared with now all of the NGO communities that's been unbranded. And we're pleased to be helping out with the U.S. initiative in Oakland, not only through funding, but with our colleagues at Levi's, thank you, Porvi, the NBA, Walgreens, Walgreens employees and stores who've been great, and Young and Rubicon to help with venue outreach, volunteer mobilization, and social marketing. And GBC has been instrumental in the project management of that project. Working closely with the mayor's office and Get Screened Oakland through Dr. Marsha Martin, they've given us great entree to the community. We've had great success in now providing greater prevention outreach to the impacted communities. So that's
great. And I'm glad that you started with that, because when I saw Chevron, I did think, that's interesting. Yeah. So, and it makes all the sense in the world when you describe it and put it in context. And similarly, Karen, a children's company, Hasbro, makes sense to me intuitively, but can you explain how your company started to engage in this issue and why, and the kinds of partnerships that you've been able to develop?
Sure. So obviously our focus is on children and the critical life obstacles that get in their way. So since the beginning of AIDS, we have been doing work domestically, providing opportunities for children to receive treatment that they need and to experience some joy. So you'll find us doing things like hole-in-the-wall camps for the children. And now, you know, this landscape is changing as well. There are not as many children that are infected, so we're taking a look at that. But we know that they're impacted by the death of a parent, so we're looking at programs around that. We helped to establish the Hassenfeld Center for Blood Disorders at NYU, and that was actually in honor of our CEO who passed away from AIDS and was beloved, and I believe that may be why this is part of one of the things that is very important to the employees. We try to use all of the assets that we have available when we get involved with an issue so that we can really try to move the needle. So we look at our employees. So for example, particularly our senior management, we encourage them to get actively engaged, and Denise Clark, who's our chief information officer, serves as the chair of the National AIDS Fund, and we try to support her work in many ways. We have the Hasbro Children's Hospital, which was established with a great deal of employee engagement and a lot of love by the employees as well. So when we looked at this issue of AIDS and what we could do, we looked at Africa, which for us is not an area where we do business. We thought, though, we had an obligation to do something because there are so many AIDS orphans who are being impacted, so somewhere between 12 and 15 million, it's estimated. And in thinking about that, we partnered with a great organization, World Vision, who was also partnering on the ground as a program, a RAPIDS program that they had put together with the best of everybody bringing what they have to the table. And so we put our toe in the water, and it's been very successful. We do 40 schools a year. We do a number of different things. There are trucks. If anybody goes to Zambia in the bush, you might see a Hasbro truck. It's moving, though, probably medicine that you're providing, mosquito nets, and then toys are somewhat secondary to what we were doing, but we found that they actually brought a lot of joy and comfort to the children there. And that has evolved into, you know, our employees becoming more aware of the issues, and then they took it upon themselves to want to do more. So they developed a product that was on shelf this last year called Zambi. And we, you know, to the point of how do you, it was bottom up for sure. And it was also, we reached out and we partnered with some experts to help us. So Sandy Thurman was a great assistance to us, and Mary Fisher, who many of you know, I'm sure, is a wonderful advocate. So she helped us brainstorm, came into Hasbro, really infused energy around the issue for our employees. And the product was launched. Half of the profits went to benefit AIDS orphans in Africa. So it's really using, again, the assets that you have available in a very different way. And this really pushed the organization because you're talking about a difficult issue on packaging that is directed towards children. And how do you do that? And it took courage, I will say, for the corporation to do it, and they did it. That has led to a discussion around, we've been asked to be a PEPFAR partner and consider taking the game of life and making it applicable for children, make it culturally appropriate to help educate them to keep themselves safe, but also to have aspirations as well. So we're examining some of those. And I would say to Nancy's point, you absolutely need to, I think, look beyond the folks that are obvious, because we clearly wouldn't be obvious in this discussion. And that is very important. And I think also what's important is that funders need to be educated that this is an issue. You don't hear them talking a lot about this. So aside from the obvious, I think there needs to be an education. And Mark Shamley, who's here today, who's with the Association of Corporate Contribution Professionals, we talked last night, and it's an organization that convenes corporate funders, and he's offered to do a convening to help educate funders around the need and to be creative. I think they're particularly interested in strategic partnerships right now because there are so many competing demands that if they can partner, it will make the argument much easier.
Great. Thank you so much. And I have to say, I love that idea in terms of the game of life. That's very, very interesting. I want to engage our grantees now in this conversation. And I guess one of the things I'll say at the top of this is how much we appreciate the work that you are doing. And we know how difficult it is. Several members of the panel have talked about the resource deficit. So we know it's challenging, and it's challenging work on the ground. But you've done such a phenomenal job. And because of that, I wanted to find out how you believe these kinds of partnerships can support and further your work. And I wanted to ask Lewis and Joe to speak to that issue. Yes.
Thank you all for even having me on the panel. That's actually one of the things that I think that is most important. You all have come together in a partnership in order to kind of raise the capacity of all of our communities to deal with this epidemic. Without the public and private partnerships, without folks working together, there's no way that we can meet the huge gaps or the huge challenges that HIV has presented all of us with. I think that it's important that folks have mentioned definitely, and I hate to go straight to finances, but there are more challenges than there is money available to meet those challenges. And in order for us to get the best out of the monies that we have available, these public-private partnerships are the best way to do that, in my opinion. Over the years, I've been working in the field for about 13 or 14 years now, started in high school. And one of the things that I've seen over the years is that when we do come together, when the public gets together with the private, there's just sort of a synergy that's created. We get a lot more out of working together than we do from working separately. Also, I think that there are a number of more concrete ways, considering things such as marketing ability. We are on the ground and we have the connections to the community. We are of the community, we are part of the community. Yes, we know how to talk to the community, but we don't have the capacity to do the marketing that needs to be done in order to spread prevention and treatment messages the way that they need to be spread. In order for them to reach the people who really need to hear them, there are certain things that we just don't have the ability to do without the help of private partnerships. I'll cut myself off there and let Joe jump in on it, actually. We've been talking about this.
I'm Joe Kimbrell at the Louisiana Public Health Institute, and we've been a partner with the National AIDS Fund for the past 3 years and are delighted to be a grantee in this new initiative. As a public health institute, we think the public-private partnership and being a collaborator and a convener is just how we do our business. But in listening to the other potential partners today, I'm thinking too narrowly, and that there are lots of other folks out there that we could engage in the conversation. And so I'm delighted with the modeling I think that today brings to all of us. So I've learned some lessons here, I think, that I can bring back. But our Louisiana initiative is a partnership with our community-based organizations, our public hospital system, the prison system, and two of our parishes. And so, what we view this is leverage money that's going to enhance the capacity of these other organizations. So it's us and our partners that can make something much bigger than any one of us could have happen. And it's also so targeted that I think that it sets an example of how you change the way you do business in the partnerships, in the community organizations, and in the public health, and in the public hospital system, and in the prison system, so that's the sustainability piece of it. So we're modeling a different way of doing business, and we're doing it in the public-private partnership way, but we're also finding ways to be sustainable over a long period of time and address the epidemic in the South, and in particular in Louisiana, which has very high incidence of folks who are lost to care or who are diagnosed and never get in care. And so by targeting that population, we think we help enhance the health and well-being of individuals, as well as reducing the incidence of HIV in our state and communities.
Last but not least, I want to draw in Tom and your work in the Educate to Innovate campaign and that set of partnerships. And as you understand what we want to accomplish here and listen to the work that's already been done, tell us your thoughts based on your experience in the Educate to Innovate campaign and those partnerships, and any advice you might have for us as we begin our work here or further the work that's already been started here.
Thank you very much. And let me start by saying I served in another administration, and I am a huge fan of what President Obama has done in the STEM field. And I would say, number one, the White House has been tremendous in reinforcing the message and building awareness in terms of using the bully pulpit. He's just fantastic on the STEM issue, and it makes a huge difference. Number two, the White House has wonderful convening power, and that's been demonstrated in Educate to Innovate. We're a very unique model in a sense that we were funded by our lead donors, ExxonMobil, the Gates Foundation, the Dell Foundation, to become Scale Up Inc. Basically meaning we were formed to build implementation power to bring multiple funders together so that you'd have an entity that specialized in implementation. We're not a garage inventor. We don't do pilot programs. I like to say in education, we've lit about 5,000 pilots over the year, but never a furnace. What I think is so important about what we're a little bit different model than Hasbro and some of the other companies here, in that our funders did not go on our board and wanted us to build multiple funders with no individual branding. Now, what we have done is do several things which I think are transferable and I would recommend. One The Obama administration was very forthright, and I think the model is investing in innovation, to basically say we want a percentage of funding from a big pot, an education pot. We want, let's say, 15% to go to STEM activities. Number two, we're going to, out of that fund, say we're going to give, the federal government's going to put in money, but we want matching money from the private sector. That has enabled people to think broadly and have huge impact. And I would say when we do, I think there's a very important principle, which is then you have to focus on, can we show results in a quantifiable way so we can help the Obama administration continue these programs. I said to Secretary Duncan early in his tenure, Mr. Secretary, I know one thing, when you go back to ask for more money, you're going to have to talk about results, because it won't be Congress's fault. They'll want to know what you did. And therefore, I think all of us as recipients of funds have to focus on, can we do a good job of accumulating data to actually show what we have accomplished? Because we all bear that burden. The Obama administration cannot bear all the burden themselves. The model we follow builds all the way from the top down to the bottom. We give a grant, for instance, to a nonprofit entity in a state. We monitor their implementation and hold them accountable, but they have the local presence. We judge them on what sort of board of directors were they able to put together of business funders and foundation funders. And we say to them, we're going to fund 100% of your activities the first 2 years, 75 the next, 50 the next, and 25 the next, and we walk away after 5 years. So we're also going to judge you, although it's going to be run by a nonprofit, what governmental support do you have in your state? Is your commissioner of education on board? Is your governor on board? Your lieutenant governor on board, et cetera? That model has enabled us to attract state funding. In addition to the federal funding, we've gotten funding from two states for our programs. We also, when we give grants to universities, we require matching funds by the universities, and we require matching funds by the local school districts. Now, it can be in kind, but we've been able to take initial funding of $100 million and turn it into $250 million by using, in effect, building the pyramid from the top down, but it's really bottom up. And it seems to me that the model that is being used to educate and innovate, one, the Obama administration is doing a wonderful job of saying two large funders, National Science Foundation, Department of Education, et cetera, we want you to focus some of your funds on this one issue. Number two, we want to focus on implementation. Three, we'll draw to the White House CEOs, which can then, once President Obama has done his job of gearing them up and getting them revved up, then they're going to want to produce results. And that's where you all can come in, is that once they're there, then the CEO, what can I do to make a difference? Well, that's what I think the Obama administration has done a wonderful job of doing. So we're appreciative of what you're doing.
Sure. Thank you.
I think that Tom brings up a really great model. I mean, and I think we've been able to see that work also in HIV already. I mean, at the core of the National AIDS Fund model has been the community partnerships, which has really been, over the past 20 years, using National Challenge Grants to leverage local philanthropy and to keep local philanthropy engaged. And similarly, I think, Tom, to what you're talking about, you know, we've worked, for example, with the Elton John AIDS Foundation and others to be able to turn $1 million in challenge grants into $8 million a year through that process. So I think where the federal government can really come in is you have opportunities right now with the social innovation funds, you have opportunities with the health and wellness or whatever different name you talk about it through healthcare reform, the prevention and wellness strategy work, to think about setting aside resources and to ensure. I think if anything, healthcare reform we know is going to change the landscape in HIV and AIDS. And we have one opportunity to be at that table. And we need the Domestic Policy Council and ONAP and others to ensure that HIV is at that table. We know that not everybody can be at that table, but somebody who is there who probably represents the issues that we care about has to make sure that HIV is a part of that, because if it's not, people living with HIV or at risk for HIV will be lost. And there are opportunities to do set-asides from in funding pots. There's opportunities to provide guidance and leverage in that, and I think you have a host of folks here. I would really like to see a commitment from the administration to ensure that that happens, because if it doesn't, I think then we've lost a huge opportunity.
Well, and that's actually a good segue. I want to open the floor to take questions from the audience. And I just want to let you know now, ironically, as part of our Educate to Innovate campaign, today's we're participating in National Lab Day events, and I have to leave to go to a school where I've made them promise at least they won't pour water on me or set me on fire or something as part of an experiment. But I'll have to tip out, but we'll continue the Q&A for a while with James. But I'd love to take questions now. Yes, and please give us your name and organization.
Hi, I'm Rebecca Hagan. I'm the CEO of the AIDS Action Committee in Massachusetts, as well as head of AIDS Action Council and Foundation here in DC. And I just want to emphasize a couple of points. We started earlier with Jeff and several others mentioning a national AIDS and HIV strategy. And I just want to emphasize that it's so critical because it touches on so many of the things that our panelists have talked about today. The need for measurements and outcomes, that's the very basis for that. And I would really encourage that the plan ultimately set very ambitious goals. The other thing you can do with that plan is bring the hope back. Mm-hmm. As someone who goes after funders all the time, part of the reason they're not funding HIV and AIDS, they say, I've been funding it for 20 years, what difference has it made? There's still 56,000 new infections. And so we have to let people know we can actually end this epidemic. And this is an administration that has talked about hope and change. Mm-hmm. This is one of the things that does not have to be passed on to the next generation. Secondly, I love Nancy's concept of concrete projects. And again, this can come right out of a national AIDS strategy, which is, here's what the federal government is willing to do. What Candy just said, we'll tap into the health and wellness fund and healthcare reform. Here's what we need from the private sector, and here's the goals we want to achieve. And finally, you need to invest in leaders. Enough of this, let's sprinkle the stardust around. We have leaders, and you'll see many of those in here today from every community across the country. We're the ones doing the work. We serve 2,400 people a year in my office. The average income is $9,800. HIV and AIDS is like number 4 in their list of problems when they walk into our facility. We get how the local politics works. We get how to leverage business. But it can't be the inside the Beltway crowd. You have to get out. You have to bring leaders from around the country here to talk to you about what the right strategies are. So I think the panel really hit a home run today. And thanks to the White House and the leadership of the president on this issue.
Thank you.
Jump in quickly on outcomes.
Oh, sure. We'll take two responses.
In terms of outcomes, I mean, one of the big challenges we've always had in the field is it's hard to measure what doesn't happen in terms of HIV infection, and I think we've been overly narrow in looking at that, and we need to look much more broadly. I know David Holgrave is here. The field of housing and HIV, I think, is a terrific model of looking much more broadly at outcomes, and they've done a terrific job of making the case that basically if you're stably housed, you're much more likely to take your meds and you're much more likely to practice prevention. So I think we need to look at other outcome measures, and I think that would also appeal to a larger array of funders. And just also to support your point around leaders, it would be terrific if within the existing leadership programs that you have, we could carve out a certain number of slots for younger folks and maybe some not so younger folks to do women of a certain age to do HIV work specifically and to work within these groups and to provide, you know, new energy and project specific support.
Dad, I think it's very similar to education in this sense. I've been in the education space about 20 years. You go see most CEOs and they say, wait a minute, I've been contributing for X years, and what have I gotten? You have to be able to walk in and say, look, here's what we've produced in 1 year in your state. These are the quantifiable results that we will produce for you. Here's your return on investment.
Just,
okay,
just sure. About measurement. As companies and corporations, measurement and evaluation is one of the key things we ask for. GBC does that all the time. In every project they do, they ask for measurement and evaluation. This, we need to run this like a business. Mm-hmm. It is a business. And if we're reporting to stockholders, shareholders, the community, And those are demands that I think we need to make, and I think it's very important, especially in the business community.
No, absolutely, and in fact, Sonal and some of our other colleagues in the Domestic Policy Council have been engaged in a process with the Office of Management and Budget in looking at exactly that. I mean, and it goes to the president's larger command to us, you know, what works. We support what works. What doesn't work, we need to take a hard look at it. Where there are inefficiencies, we need to resolve them. So that's very much in keeping with the philosophy here.
Speaking on the point of leadership, especially building from the ground up, one of the things that I've seen over the years is that many of the agencies in our communities that are already doing really, really good work, as the funds have dwindled, many of these agencies have been forced to close their doors. And one of the things I'd like to bring up is that I'd like to challenge you all to look into the leaders that are already currently there in our communities. I mean, I represent a number of the communities that are highly affected by HIV. I'm an MSM, a man who has sex with other men. I am an African-American man. I guess I just fell out of the youth category. I'm in my 30s now. But I know, right?
I think you're still young.
The first gray hair. You know, I've seen many, many good programs, unfortunately, fall by the wayside because in our communities, we don't necessarily have the capacity to evaluate as well as some of these companies are able to do. And that's also one of the important things about the public-private partnership, is that if we maximize on these partnerships, then those community centers and community-based organizations that already exist, that are already representative of the community, are a part of the community, have their hands in the community, and the community trusts them, don't have to close their doors and can continue to do work and create programs that really work for my culture and my community. But we need you all to help us to increase our capacity in order to do the evaluations and prove that what we are saying works and what we know works actually does work.
And I can tell you, coming out of the work of our Office of Faith-Based and Neighborhood Partnerships, that was one of the things that the council discussed and said was very, very important in terms of capacity building. Joshua Dubois, who runs that office, works very closely with Sonal. I think it's one of the things that we'll be looking on with greater intensity over the coming year. I know there's a person who was coming up. Oh, okay. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I don't mean to be rude. I'm going to have slide out, but thank you so much, and
thank you to the members of the panel. I just want to add that I believe Guillermo Chacon with Latino Commission on AIDS, we strongly believe that the partnership between community, private, and government are key. And we believe that just happened Census 2010 that will generate also a tremendous challenge for all of us to really respond to the needs, the diverse needs, and also how right now the challenge has to go not only to craft national partnerships, regional, but also local. And we're very concerned about the crisis that we're going through, several states that are cutting programs right now. And I think it's the perfect timing for the private, government, and community to come together to respond to that. And the second piece that I want to highlight that I believe is crucial is how we also pay attention to other partners. The small business community, I think, is a very important. They have a strong voice. They have a reach to the ethnic media, the local level. It's another venue that I think we need to keep in mind when we craft partnerships. And also look the South. I mean, we're very concerned and happy that Joe is here because we see also tremendous challenge how people have been migrating throughout the U.S. In the South, we have a huge deficit, and I believe partnership will be a vehicle to respond to those needs. Thank you.
Can I maybe respond just for a moment? Yeah, just when you think about resources, it doesn't really matter whether you're private sector, public sector, you'll never have enough resources. I teach that to my teenage children as well. and it's the constant challenge of balancing between what are our priorities, how can we execute, and where do we get the best things done. We spent the last 11 years in Africa working on our huge campaign around AIDS, where really we've done enormous amounts of work with very little money. We bumped our heads. We learned what doesn't work. We've interacted with governments who wanted to work with us, governments who didn't want to work with us, societies who refused to listen to us. But the integration that we've done with communities in this organization has allowed us to leave sustainable operations that'll exist even when we're gone, with communities locking down and understanding how to use money, how to stretch a penny. And I'd hate for us to be reinventing the wheel wherever we go. We have these best practices we can bring back. People are saying to me, well, how does Africa compare to the United States? Well, when you look at the issues, they're exactly the same. The issues around personal issues of barriers, societal issues of barriers, and structural, they are exactly the same. And we are very keen to bring back these learnings and bring them back into the U.S. and share them with everyone possible to make sure that we can grow quickly as opposed to starting from the beginning again.
Hi, I'm Terry McGovern from the Ford Foundation. Thank you, all of you, for your remarks. I guess I just wanted to raise the point that I think often to the business community, advocacy can be problematic. And in this epidemic, if you don't have advocacy for policy, people can't get the drugs. If their behavior is criminalized, if there's ADAP lists. So we've been trying to use different languages to approach businesses on this, but I do think it's a critical part of the solution to the epidemic that I'd like to see a lot of business kind of be more open to.
I think corporations like to fund services better. Typically, corporations fund, honestly, sort of lower-risk items. We are in a different category, but I do know that in presenting advocacy proposals to my board, which are almost all business people, the issue has consistently been outcomes, that you have to have finite campaigns with finite outcomes and finite wins. And I think the good news is we have a policy backdrop now where you can actually win, and we've had significant wins, but we would love more company, and if folks feel that there's other better advocacy or more advocacy that we could be funding at MAC Cosmetics, we're very open to that.
I think that the work that the Ford Foundation has done across the South has been a huge investment in ensuring that there are state, to someone's point earlier, maybe it was Guillermo's point, that we have to have state and regional advocacy. So it's great that we have organizations in Washington who are doing tremendous work at the federal level. But at the end of the day, if we don't build that capacity for regional and local and state level capacity, we're never going to be able to make the kind of change we need, primarily, and I would say because, as again, with healthcare reform, so much of the opt-in, opt-out, what's going to happen with Medicaid, who's going to be covered, who's not going to be covered, ADAP waiting lists, et cetera, most of those decisions are going to happen at the state level. So I would really encourage you. I mean, I think there are folks, it's not like, you know, the Ford Foundation is a little bit different, but not particularly excited about risk necessarily, and definitely wants outcomes. I mean, that's fair, right? So, I mean, I think that there are ways to start to bring together advocates and some of the funders who've been funding advocacy to try to understand what are those metrics. And I think you're right on, because I think unless we can demonstrate what those metrics are, and not just the end goal, but what are those intermediary metrics that show that we're making progress, even if it takes 3 or 5 or 10 years for a law to change.
I could jump in really quickly on it. I think that I understand that, especially as corporations, you know, you all have to make sure that we're talking about outcomes. But I think you make a very good point that we also have to look at those factors that let us know that we're making progress in the meantime. Because sometimes outcomes aren't going to come for a long period of time. And if we skip over things because we don't see that outcome just yet, then we're going to miss out on a lot of very good things. I mean, I've seen this happen already in some of our communities. We've seen programs that could not produce the outcomes or could not even prove that they necessarily had, they directly produced those outcomes. They could only prove that they had an influence on helping to create positive outcomes. If we to get too focused on outcomes, then we're going to miss out on a lot, especially when it comes to empowering the community. A lot of people feel that their voices are not going to be heard if you're focusing just on the outcomes and not on the things, on the little stepping stones that we step on to get to the outcomes.
There's one thing that I think is important. You all live this every day. There are lots and lots of folks out there who do not, and who may not be funding this issue because they think maybe this is the one issue that actually was fixed, that they're not aware of what's happening. So please don't miss the opportunity in all of this to re-educate about what the crisis really is and what the impact of that crisis is. Don't assume people know that and that they're not funding because there's not measurable outcomes, or I think there's a re-education that needs to happen.
I'm Catherine Wetton from Duke University, and I'm honored to be funded by the National AIDS Fund and Bristol-Myers Squibb in this last initiative. And I am glad to hear the talk about evaluation, because I know that that can be something that is very difficult to fund, and particularly for private funders, because we want so much to help people, and we want our dollars to go directly, and I was a practitioner first and then a researcher, and we want to be able to see the dollars go to people so that they'll be served. And so it's hard to convince people that you need to fund evaluation, but what that can do is allow, if we get effective models of care, we can then roll those out, and it won't cost as much in the future when we're funding good programs. So that's something that I hope people will work with their corporations and organizations to try and understand, and it's not, it does cost money to do that. And I also thank you, Anthony, for talking about the international models and the local models that are really applicable internationally, and international models applicable locally. And I think also with the epidemic that we have in the Deep South that looks a lot like epidemics that we have around the world, there's a lot to share across those two regions. Thank you.
I think that we need to think of evaluation as not something that's separate and apart, but something as an integral part of how you design your program from day one. So you're evaluating and measuring as you go. And that you're also, in terms of capacity, that you're building capacity of the folks you're re-granting money to, so that their organizations are stronger, so that they know how to measure and evaluate and are accountable. But it's just a way you do your business, and you build that into the way you do your business. And then I think we have a better chance of being credible with when we try to make our case to potential funders.
Oh, okay. One last question.
Is it on? Hello. Hi. Isela Gonzalez with San Francisco Positive Charge Grantee. And I just wanted to comment, as an HIV prevention provider, that I know that, you know, this is really exciting and interesting that we're revisiting these partnerships. However, just so that we're all on the same page around where we're at with the epidemic and what we know and the knowledge that we have, there are new biomedical interventions that are coming up. There's a whole new approach to the work that we're doing that we as providers are also educating ourselves about and having conversations about. And I think as we move into these partnerships to understand that, yes, we will do our work to educate you. However, we are also struggling with some of these changes and how we're going to implement those services as we move forward. And, you know, understanding that, yes, it's wonderful that we're here, but, you know, it's been several administrations that we have not been here. So to also understand that this is a new place for us in many different ways, and to just remember that, you know, it's going to take some time for us to really determine what's the best approach as we move forward with implementing some of the new interventions and modalities that we're working with now.
Thank you. There's a panel. Want to make one final comment?
As we're using these new innovative interventions and programs, that we have to stay away from a cookie cutter method. We really have to learn how to work with the communities and really forge or shape these programs so that they work specifically for that community. We definitely can take some things and transfer them from one region to another, but in that process, we must still work with each independent community and shape that intervention or that program so that it works in that community. We don't just pick it up and toss it over to the next section.
I want to thank everybody, and I wish we had more time. I want to remind everybody that this is the start of a conversation. We will be having similar conversations around this concept moving forward. If you look at Innovate Educate to Innovate program that started as a basically a conversation very similar to this, and today is a massive program, and it only took a year to get that developed. So we hope that this conversation moves forward, and we hope that we can count on your support for that. So thank you very much, everybody.